Trump, here to go hate.
It was just 7 days after President Donald Trump was inaugurated. You remember. On January 27, 2017, President Trump signed Executive Order 13769, officially named Protecting the Nation from Foreign Terrorist Entry into the United States, and protests erupted around the country. No refugees allowed into the United States for 120 days, no Syrian refugees indefinitely, and no one from seven overwhelmingly Muslim countries allowed to enter the country for 90 days. Those countries were Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen.
This is something that 75-80% of Americans out there agree with. We don't want people that are traveling back and forth to one of these seven countries that harbor terrorists to be traveling freely back and forth between the United States and those countries.
Then Chief of Staff Reince Priebus defending the order in the days after it was signed. That first travel ban, as it came to be known, was struck down by the court system almost immediately, using the president's own words in the campaign as the basis of their rulings.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
The president and the administration vehemently denied this policy was a Muslim ban, including then-press secretary Sean Spicer.
There are 46 other countries with Muslim populations that are not part of this. And I think that's an important thing to note. So whether you're talking about Algeria, Jordan, Kuwait, Oman, or the UAE, there's 46 Muslim-majority countries that are not in the seven.
They came back with a second iteration to try and appease the courts. But that, too, was struck down. Then in September 2017, the administration issued a third version of the ban. And finally, today, the Supreme Court issued a 5-4 ruling on the third version of the travel ban. In a huge and long-awaited victory for President Trump, the court sided with the Trump administration, overturning the Ninth Circuit Court's attempt to place a hold on the ban.
A tremendous success, a tremendous victory for the American people and for our Constitution. This is a great victory for our Constitution. We have to be tough, and we have to be safe, and we have to be secure.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Here to walk us through what this all means is Sahar Aziz, professor at Rutgers Law School. Hi, Sahar.
Hi, Tanzina. Thanks.
So important news today out of the Supreme Court. Give us a sense of the scope of this ruling. Who is affected, and essentially, who can't come to the United States?
Well, the ruling by the Supreme Court is going to severely restrict the ability of non-immigrant visas or people who apply for non-immigrant visas from coming to the United States, particularly from those countries in the executive order, all of whom are Muslim-majority country except for two, North Korea and Venezuela. And as we know, people from North Korea do not come to the U.S. due to their own government's restrictions. And the Venezuelan ban is only limited to diplomats.
This was a 5-4 decision. It was obviously on partisan lines, but we did see from Judge Sotomayor a dissent in which she says, and I quote, "Taking all of the evidence together, a reasonable observer would conclude that the proclamation was driven primarily by anti-Muslim animus." Your thoughts, Sahar?
I agree with Sotomayor because what she did is she looked at the entire record starting from when Trump was a presidential candidate, where he made multiple anti-Muslim statements over months, actually over a year, promising his very right-wing anti-Muslim base that he was going to keep Muslims out of America, and he was also going to attempt to deport those who were here. So she, in contrast to Roberts and the majority opinion, looked at all the facts rather than narrowly looking at the third version, which is effectively Trump's attempt to pass through an executive order that was effectively driven by religious animus.
Now, let's talk. You mentioned this was the third version of this. Can you tell us exactly how it's different from the earlier ones?
It's different insofar as it has less countries. It has Iran, Iraq, Libya, Syria, and Yemen, and Chad as the Muslim majority countries. And it also added Venezuela and North Korea. Now, Chad was removed in April 2018. It's also different in terms of exempting lawful permanent residents and providing case-by-case waivers under certain circumstances. The problem is that, as the Breyer dissent shows, there are very few examples of these waivers actually being granted. In fact, he showed that only two waivers were granted in the first month, and up to 430 in the first 4 months out of millions, if not at least hundreds of thousands of applications from these countries. So although the third version is more narrow, it still is driven by the same religious animus that Trump overtly expressed publicly via Twitter, via the news, via his website. And the majority essentially just put its blinders on and said, we're only going to look at the last 6 months, and we're only going to look at this third version, that the language of which is facially neutral, but the motivation behind it is far from neutral.
Let's take that aside and see what the court has actually decided. Is it that the president has the authority to have this much control over immigration, or is it that he has the authority to decide when certain people from certain countries are considered a national security threat, or both?
The court has effectively stated that the president did not violate the Immigration Nationality Act, specifically Section 1182F and 1152A1A. By showing that, in fact, he can exclude these individuals or all citizens from these countries because he claims it's detrimental to the interests of the United States, and that by doing so, he did not discriminate against them based on race, sex, nationality, place of birth, or place of residence. So the plenary power, or the broad authority and discretion granted to the president in immigration affairs, foreign affairs, and national security, pre-existed this ruling. What the court did is it reaffirmed it and effectively communicated to Trump and future administrations that even if you go on the record and show that you hold religious animus, racial animus, other forms of unlawful animus, we are going to let you put forward executive orders that are at least that are facially neutral, but may be driven by animus.
And we're also talking about the restrictions on many of these countries are indefinite and extensive. They include not just being able to come to the United States, but being able to work, study, and even vacation in the United States. Is that correct?
Correct. The executive order is going to harm students, academics, children, asylum seekers, refugees, and all people who seek non-immigrant visas or non-lawful permanent resident visas from coming to the United States and effectively benefiting the United States through their investments, through their studying, through their work, if they are from these countries, and if the administration will not provide them with waivers, which the record has shown that it is not providing waivers. And in fact, as Breyer's dissent showed, the State Department has not even issued guidance to the consular officials telling them here's the criteria for the waivers. And there are some consular officials who have issued affidavits on the record in some court filings stating that this is all window dressing. And in fact, the understanding is that waivers are not granted.
Now, is this, I guess the question is, what precedent would this set for future presidents? There is a lot of concern about this administration's power over the judiciary and other parts of the executive branch. So what do you see the future implications of this being?
Well, it gives another stamp of approval that the executive can do whatever it wishes when it comes to immigration, foreign relations, and national security, so long as it provides a facially neutral language in its executive orders, and that the court will not in any way question what the real motivation is, even if that motivation is based on unlawful religious animus or racial animus. So what the court has done is given a carte blanche to the Trump administration and future administrations to discriminate, particularly against Muslims, so long as it's not stated that he's discriminating in the actual executive order. But this is a president who has gone on the record multiple times over a course of over 12 months stating his explicit animus towards Muslims, and even confirmed to his supporters that when he issued the first version, that this was keeping his campaign promise that he was going to keep Muslims out of America because he believed that Islam is violent and Muslims are violent. So the fact that the court completely closed its eyes to these facts, these credible facts, is very troubling for religious freedom rights, for anti-discrimination laws, and frankly for our international reputation as a place that prides itself in supporting civil rights and religious freedom.
Sahar Aziz is a professor at Rutgers Law School. Sahar, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. The ban means that there is a presumption that my family, just based on their religion and race and nationality, create a threat to U.S. national security.
Since last January, the various iterations of the travel ban have changed how millions of people come and go from the U.S., including people like Tara Separi-Farr and her family. We spoke to Tara on this program back in April, and we talked to her again today to get her reaction to the court's decision.
I'm very disappointed in the decision of the Supreme Court to uphold the travel ban, because in reality, nothing has changed from the first version of the travel ban to the most recent one for my family.
Tara came to the U.S. as a student from Iran in 2010. She's now a researcher at Human Rights Watch. When the first travel ban came down in January, she was a green card holder and had to cancel trips abroad. But the real impact has been on her family, who remain in Iran.
They have to prove basically their innocence through this extremely lengthy and untransparent process of a waiver visa, so they could actually come here to see their child. And several reporters have demonstrated how rare such waivers are granted to people who are applying from countries that are under travel ban.
Today, Tara is an American citizen, but she doesn't completely feel that way.
I certainly don't feel equal if I think that the highest institution in this country will not protect my rights and rights of my family the same degree that as other people.
And we want to hear from you. How are you reacting to the president's travel ban?
Hi, my name is Robert Harris, and I'm from Miami, Florida. And I am not at all surprised by today's ruling by the Supreme Court. It's stacked with conservatives, deliberately, and they're going to always vote in favor of the conservative and their ideals. So no surprise.
My name is John Werner. I'm calling from St. Louis, Missouri. My opinion is there are a lot of terrorists that are coming from these particular countries. It's not only just because they're Muslim. I have Muslim friends. I've worked with Muslim friends, and I don't have a problem with Muslims. It's the terrorists that are coming out of these countries. Trump's solution is to ban everybody coming out of the country until we can vet these people better.
This is Nikki Mohammed Fauzi from Arlington, Texas. We have just nailed the coffin of isolationism shut, and with it, the beginning of the end of the United States as a world power. The differences between us and global empires of the past was that we had diversity and inclusion and fearlessness. But since 1989 and the end of the Cold War, the baby boomer generation has worked so hard to create a replacement enemy for communism, read terrorism, that they've turned the U.S. into a fearful, weak shut-in.
And please, we want to hear what you think. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Tweet us at The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.